purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vidura was already perfect due to his unalloyed devotion to the infallible Lord. The Lord and the living entities are all qualitatively the same by nature, but the Lord is quantitatively much greater than any individual living entity. He is ever infallible, whereas the living entities are prone to fall under the illusory energy. Vidura had already surpassed the fallible nature of the living entity in conditional life due to his being achyuta bhava, or legitimately absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord. This stage of life is called achyuta bhava siddha, or perfection by dint of devotional service. Anyone, therefore, who is absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord is a liberated soul and has all admirable qualities. The learned sage Maitreya was sitting in a solitary place on the bank of the Ganges at Hardwar, and Vidura, who was a perfect devotee of the Lord and possessed all good transcendental qualities, approached him for inquiry. Om Agyana Tamanandasya Janan Jana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So in the previous chapter, we were hearing about Vidura talking to Uddhava, and Uddhava was getting restless. I've got to go. Krishna's told me he's absorbing Krishna. He had to go. He just had to go to Bhadrikashram. He was just... So Vidura had a question. So Uddhava said, okay, you go to Maitreya. He's not very far away. He's nearby, and you can ask your question to him. It's interesting. I was looking at, I don't know exactly where the conversation with Uddhava and Vidura took place. Anybody know exactly where it was? Anyway, I was trying to work out how far away it was. He said it wasn't very far, but the closest the Yamuna and the Ganges is about 100 kilometers. So there's a certain idea about what's far and what's not very far. I was talking to Kalakanta. I've been away 3 weeks on a service with Kalakanta in India, which I'll talk about a little bit more. And he was telling me about, well, his daughter is close by. I said, well, how far away is she? She said 500 kilometers. So for a Brit, 500 kilometers is a long way. It's like, you know, Inverness or something. It's a long way to go. It's not close by at all. You know, maybe central London is closer by. So it's about scale, because he's from Brazil, and Brazil is like, you know, 2,000 kilometers from one end to the other, north and south. So it was close by. So here, he was told it's close by. You can find him close by. So, interesting about these, the rivers, fortunately, what happened, you may know that there was a controversy in India about cows. So the GBC wanted to get a survey of what is the real state of cow protection in ISKCON in India. And there's about 70 goshalas. So Kalakanta arranged that four teams would go north, south, east, and west to survey, to inspect every goshala and give a report, how we're doing. So as a consequence of that tour, which I just came back from, I had the opportunity to be in and in close proximity of a number of rivers. So I went to Vrindavan, so I was close to the river Yamuna. I was in Mayapur, so I actually went into the Ganges River. We went south to a place called Rajamundari. Rajamundari. So Rajamundari is next to the Gangotri. And another place near there was next to the Krishna River. So somewhere or other, by providence, I was able to go to these rivers, and they are massive. They're massive rivers. And I was looking at the length of some of these rivers. You probably all know this, but the Yamuna is about 1,400 kilometers long. The Ganges is 2,500 kilometers long. The Godavari is 1,500 kilometers long. And the Krishna River is 1,400 kilometers long. Massive, massive rivers in India. So India is very, very well served with rivers. And not only that, but these are holy rivers. These are rivers that you go to and you get purified physically, and you get purified spiritually. When we cross the Godavari, it's 3 kilometers across. We may recall that when Srila Prabhupada came to England, he was quite disappointed at the Thames. It's quite tiny. Of course, if you go to the kind of south end opening of the Thames, you might get an idea. It's a bit big there, but the actual Thames itself is quite small. I think maybe the Krishna River, the bit that I saw, seemed to be in that kind of width. So these are major rivers, and here we're talking about Haridwar, a place along the Ganges. This is interesting that in this verse, text 1, it uses the word Dwari. And I was noting when I was in the airport, so which I went to quite a few on my trip, the door to the out is called Dwari. So Dwar means two, and Ari means enemy. The enemy of two. Interesting. Why is the door an enemy? And I was thinking, actually it is. It's a threshold. Whatever happens to that door, it's a conflict zone. Someone knocks on your door. Is it a friend? Is it a friend or foe? Do they want something? Do they want my time? What do they want? You kind of create it. Creates a little anxiety. So there's something about a door that's between two places that is a source of conflict. Interesting enough, one of the words for we have the three sandhi, three junctions of the day. So sometimes there's a battle is called a sandhi because two things are clashing, colliding. So things are colliding with that gap. So there's something different going on in this Dwari. This is Dyu Nadia. This is the celestial Ganges, the river. And Dew means divine or celestial. There's something, there's an opening on earth where the celestial Ganges is appearing amongst us. There's a doorway there. And there's a place you can go to the source of the Ganges. It is the foot of a glacier. Of course, we know, well, we hear, we read, the Ganges comes from a celestial plane. There's methodology of it coming down, and we're able to access it. So in this place, this place is where Vidura went. Rishabha, this is the best of the Kurus. Rishabha means powerful. Interesting, when you start looking, well, you find that cows are all over the Bhagavatam and all over the Vedic culture. So Vrisha is normally the bull, the picture of a bull. And Jenny, in Krishna's pastimes, wherever a Vrisha is described, it's talking about a fully potent, muscular bull. So Vidura was a powerful person. Here we're talking about him in terms of him being a pure devotee of the Lord. So somehow that imagery of a pure devotee tends to kind of shrink the stature, shrink the kind of prominence of someone like that. But Vidura was a powerful person. He was a kshatriya. Although he was a saintly person, he was powerful. He was a kshatriya. He could rule armies. Kurunam, and he's from the Kuru dynasty. And he's going to where Maitreya is. Asinam Agada Bodham. That Agada means deep. Bodham, his knowledge was very deep. We heard controversially, I would say, in a previous verse, a very previous chapter, that Maitreya wasn't described as a pure devotee. There were some elements there that weren't the topmost. But somehow or other, he was there when Krishna left our earthly, the earthly realm, you could say. So there's something very extraordinary about Maitreya. In any case, Uddhava said, you go to Maitreya. And so his knowledge is deep. It's really, really deep. And there's something very... We want people to tell us things that are true. What's really, you know, give me some real wisdom. We want people who have that depth of knowledge, got a broad spectrum of knowledge. So Maitreya had this. His knowledge was deep, very vast. Probably used the word unfathomable. In the ocean, they measure things in terms of fathoms. I don't know what, how, anyone know how big a fathom is? I didn't look it into it, didn't look up. Anyway, it's a certain depth. Sorry? I know, but I wonder how deep it is. Anyway, so Prabhupada says unfathomable. You can't get to the end of how deep the knowledge of Maitreya is. Shapato shato pasrichucha. This is interesting. Shata is described as being vidura. Shata is a snake bite. Snake bite. Somebody's been bitten by a snake. It's called shata. So why is vidura called shata? Well, you think about it. He was bitten by the sharp words of Duryodhana. He was bitten so sharp by those words that was it. He got his bow and he put it on the next to the door. And again, that word dwar is there again. He put it on the door of the palace and that was it. He was going. He's given up that life. He's now going to absorb himself fully in the path of a mendicant. So he was bitten by the sharp words of Duryodhana and that propelled him to this spiritual path. So sometimes it's like that. We may be bitten by the sharp words of somebody, and that bites us, but it causes us to do something that actually we recognize along the way has been for our ultimate benefit. So he was bitten by these sharp words of Duryodhana, but he's here now because of those sharp words, you could say. And he went, he approached Nira, Achyuta Bhava Siddha. And describing here, this is talking about Vidura, his characteristics are Achyuta Bhava Siddha. Bhava means a state like it comes from that Sanskrit word bhava, to be, to exist. So bhava is a state of mind, a state of being, a state of existence. We recall in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto. Just be my devotee, just absorb yourself, and just be a devotee. So here, Vidura, he's Achyuta. Bhava, he's absorbed in Achyuta, the infallible Lord. And Siddha, not just to some degree, but completely perfect in that absorption. Papricha Guna Abrita. And he... And he was perfect in gentleness and satisfied in transcendence. This is a very great thing, to be gentle. Sometimes our tendency is to be ungentle. Someone says something to us and we want to react to it in a certain way, get aggressive or something. But here, Vidura's qualities are described as gentle, and also he is satisfied in transcendental qualities. I would think this is kind of a barometer for us about our own, you could say, spiritual standing. How satisfied are we in our transcendental status, in our transcendental qualities? The qualities of transcendence, are we satisfied in them? Or are we looking for, trying to find a way to enjoy the material world a little bit or a lot? Whereas Vidura is described here that he is satisfied in the transcendence. So here in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he starts off by saying, makes this comparison again, brings us to a very lofty state of our own existence. Who are we in this world? We're going to hear about why the materialists are suffering, why everyone's suffering in the material world. This is if it comes the next verse tomorrow. You'll hear about this question. But Srila Prabhupada in the purport is taking us that we, this unalloyed devotion to the infallible Lord, this infallible Lord, that we're also part of the infallible Lord. We also have the same characteristics of a tutor. But we're not a tutor because we have a tendency to get mesmerized by the material world. We can become interested in what's going on here externally. We're going to be identifying with the next verse tomorrow, most of us. This is why we're suffering in the material world. So our constitutional nature is one with Krishna in quality, but not quantity. So he's a tutor because he never falls down, whereas we're fallible because, well, here we are in the material world. We made a choice. We decided to go the other way. I was reflecting a little bit on we're hearing the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and Haridas left. He made a choice. He left the association of Lord Chaitanya, and he went to got interested in the Badaharis, the gypsy girls. So he's right there with Krishna himself, and he made a choice. Well, something else is on my mind right now. So somehow or other, we have the ability or had the ability to make that choice, and lo and behold, we have this place where we're experiencing what it's like to be a fallen soul. But that's not Krishna. So he's ever infallible, never falls down. And now Vidura is on that level again. He's absorbed in that status. He's not going to fall down. He's completely absorbed in that Bhava platform, the Achyuta Bhava platform. And for him, there's no more interest in this material world. And Maitreya here, he's sitting in this solitary place on the bank of the Ganges at Haridwar. Haridwar is interesting because this is a place, again, the gate of Hari. Srila Prabhupada said this is where the source of the Ganges is. But if you go to the Haridwar, anyone been to Haridwar? Anyone been to Haridwar? You've been there. I went with you. Anyway, you go to Haridwar, the river flows through Haridwar. It comes from somewhere. So actually, you can go further back. There's a place called, can't remember the name of it, but we went there on a winding, precipitous route to the other place where two rivers join, Alakandadi. And anyway, so somewhere or other, Haridwar is also a gate, Haridwar, the gate of Hari. So it's also the entrance place. So it's a very holy place to go there. This is where the celestial Ganges is coming to earth. Therefore, saintly people want to go to that place because it's surcharged with transcendence. In fact, you go to India. I mean, I was quite amazed actually. Particularly, you notice it in Mayapur because the numbers of pilgrims is astronomical. Both temple rooms are completely packed with devotees. You can hardly find a space to, you know, your shoulders to be in there, touch as well as your shoulders. And we went to a number of temples. Went to Vrindavan temple. Again, same thing. People just flowing in like a river. People who are earnestly desiring to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We went to Hyderabad, same thing. I was this kind of balcony looking over in the courtyard, and people were flowing in one side, queuing up for darshan, having darshan, coming out, queuing up for prasadam, staying in the center, moving. It was like that for hours. Hours are going on like that. So people are holy people. They want to go to these sacred places. So you go to Haridwar and you find people, they go there, they're meeting the saintly people. They are bathing in the faith, in the rivers. They're trying to perfect their spiritual life. So this is not surprising that someone of Maitreya's caliber also was there. We're reminded that we don't go to the holy place just to have a bath. We're reminded that we go there to hear from the saintly people. So Vidura is showing that example. He was inspired to go there by Uddhava. He's now going there to associate. He didn't go there for a bath. There are many places that have been depicted in his life to have bath in the holy places. But here, he's going here to talk something profound with Maitreya. And because he is so pure, he's not interested in the gossip of the day. He's not going there, what's going on. He's not interested in that, what's happening with the politics. He wants to know what's really important to the living entity. This is what he was aspiring to find out. We, just in a kind of related to this tour, my colleague and I was traveling with a devotee called Dam Gopal. He's the Goshal in charge in Mayapur. So one night we were traveling we had like a tight schedule. We had to visit 15 Goshalas, boom, 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 boom. Expect them. It's like hundreds of kilometers between them. So one night we were traveling overnight in this third class train, sleeper train, and I was somewhere there, I was on the top bunk. Anyway, so we got there and we woke up, I don't know, maybe 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, our station was arrived, so we got out. We got on this rickshaw to the temple, so we kind of stumble into the temple, and there's this incredible, beautiful blue temple, Rajamundi. Anyone ever been there? It's stunning. I had no idea that temple existed. You been there? Okay. It's extraordinary. There are so many beautiful temples in our society. I had no idea. I've been to the main ones, but though these, everyone's like such a beautiful work of art. And so we're walking to the guest house, and this fantastic blue painted temple is there. I don't think it was painted originally, but they decided to paint it blue, and they did it really exquisitely. And then the temple's on the first level, like a lot of these temples are. You go up a stairway to the temple. Usually on the ground floor, they have a hall of some sort. So you go up to the first floor, and then on that level, they have this walkway right round on the outside of the temple where you can do external parikram, and every, 10 places, they have a dash avatar. Exquisitely beautiful. And then right there, within a few meters of the border of the property, is the Godavari River. What an incredible place. In the Goshala, in the little Goshala, 8 little beautiful cows, so we noted those. They were there more or less to people to reciprocate with cows, so they were, put their chins up and you can stroke them. So it's interesting to have that experience of all these beautiful papers, people flowing in. Another one that comes to mind was Vishakhapatnam. Anyone been to Vishakhapatnam? You've been traveled. You're a well-traveled soul over there. They're building another fantastic temple. It's South Indian style. It's right there on the beach. Of course, an Indian beach isn't quite the same as another beach, because there's lots of other things on the beach that you probably wish weren't on there. But still, it's a beautiful place. I was thinking this litter is probably good to keep people away. Otherwise, people might exploit it in different ways. Beautiful place. So these holy places are beautiful. They're full of transcendence. And when you go there, people aren't... They're talking about Krishna consciousness. One thing we find... This on the cow note for your interest... There are 400 temples in India. 400. While we were there, we went to the opening of the Rohini temple. It cost $50 million. Absolutely incredible place inside. Beautiful, really, really beautiful. We also stayed at Noda, another fantastic temple. And anyway, so there are 400 temples, but there's only 70 Goshalas. So part of our study was to assess... How are the cows? Are they healthy? Are they stout? Are they thin? What kind of facilities are the Goshala doing? How is the working of the oxen? Well, Not very well, I would say, in general in India. It's very hard to find a working ox. Sometimes they had a working bull, which is also an area of discussion. Why are you not castrating your bulls? That was one of the issues we were touching upon. Generally, I would say the cows are in medium health. There are some cases where they're a bit thin, but generally they're in medium health. But like most places, the cow protection is not linked scientifically, numerically, with the needs of the temple. And it's done in many cases in a very sentimental way, not scientific, not like a powerful vaishya would do to make sure the milk yield of the cows is good. So, for example, here at the manor, you would expect to get about 27 liters per day per calf per year. If you calculate the figures, 10,000 liters per calf over 4 years comes about 27 liters per day. There they're getting 1 liter, 2 liters, maybe up to 4 liters. So why is it? Why is it the home of the Sarabi cow? Why is their milk yield so low? Well, it's because I think sentiment has taken over from practical, cool-headed vaishya dynamics. This bull should impregnate that cow. Imagine a field full of bulls, and a field full of in the same pen as a field full of cows. Is any bull impregnating any cow? And therefore, the potency and the virility and the power and the milkability of the cows has become deteriorated. So one of our tasks was to point that out. We need a calculation. If we wanted to provide just the deities in all the temples in India, how many cows do you think that would be? 56,000. For our own ISKCON society, just for the deities, using their kind of average yields, 56,000 cows, calves, bulls, and oxen. There's about 4,000 in the Indian herd, national herd. So the journey of our movement has gone and grown and grown and grown and grown and grown. But cow protection, cows, has been left in the barn, you could say. It hasn't grown, it hasn't kept a pace. Not going to what's happening in that continent. It's happening everywhere. Where'd you go? Where'd you go to a goshala in any part of our society? I'm not criticizing society, it's just information. Where would you go where the cows have a relevance to the milk use of the temple? Nowhere. There's hardly a center in the world. I would say none, but you might find one that's got some relevance because their milk use is so small that the deities can easily be bribed by a few cows. So one of our tasks was to give a report and then tweak their minds with these numbers. Mayapur needed 1,000 cows, calves, bulls, and oxen. They've only got 400. Vrindavan needed 3,000. They've only got 400. So there's huge amounts of savor in the realm of cow protection that is available for people. So rivers, incredible rivers, holy rivers that you can dip into, purify yourself materially and spiritually. And the real thing is to find saintly people. So this is what we're getting from this verse, that you may have to go to a holy place and find saintly people and ask them something. What's the purpose of my life? What am I meant to do? What's my relationship with Krishna? So here in this one verse, many powerful things are described. You're eternal. Krishna's eternal. Krishna's got these fantastic qualities. You've also got those fantastic qualities, but you can lose sight of them by your attachment to the material world. But by meeting saintly people, they'll remind you, they'll prick you a little bit. Don't stay contented here. Do something positive. Do something, find saintly people, and also do something about it. For example, we're imbibed by the mission of Srila Prabhupada not just to sit by and watch the world go by. We're meant to be activists, to actively help others be Krishna conscious, to understand, to discover Krishna consciousness. So our meditation, our peacefulness is to be absorbed in that mission of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. There's just some thoughts that come to mind from this verse and purport. If anybody has any questions or comments. Oh, actually, I was thinking about our good friend Taruna there, because he has traversed those rivers in a dinghy. Was it the Yamuna or the Ganges you went on? Went on both. So if you want a meter by meter tour of the Ganges, you might have to take Taruna and ask him to give you a detailed explanation of the...
Something I will do twice. Actually, we went from Haridwar. We started once in Haridwar, and we nearly died all within a few miles. It was so dangerous, most dangerous things. Really dangerous. Like in that part, every day that cases dead people, those rafters, even in suitable equipment, almost every day somebody dies. Tourists come. There almost every you've been there. Almost every mile or something, there is a rafting club. So foreigners, tourists come in rafting, and then they told us it's very dangerous, especially that place from Haridwar down. At least in 3-4 places, it's very much 6 places is particularly very dangerous. I don't know how we did with this dinghy. Was it ridiculous? We didn't have even a safety belt, nothing. It was some kind of ridiculous floating some jacket, something. And a few of us nearly drowned, basically, and together with one old man called Mahavishnu Swami, with his danda on the dinghy. Anyway, was beautiful experience, but I'll never do again. was kind of incredible. Anyway, so that's it. That's just short.
Thank you. Any comments, questions? Prabhupada.
As an interesting thing occurred to me, that there are all sorts of milk available now. Whether it be Goshala milk or from these farm cows, intense, you could say they aren't even looked after properly, or they are, but the land they feed on is impure, they say organic milk and all this, but it's not, as you say, like here at the Goshala. It's still done on a mass basis of so-called organic milk farms. What you say is true. But also it occurred to me that it doesn't mean we stop offering milk. Krishna loves every cow in all situations. And that if it's not available, you take the next best. Say organic milk, but not produced to our standard. And so, if it's not available, so I say, well, this is cow's milk. Krishna loves all cows. So I'm going to offer it anyway. And hopefully the offering process will purify it in some way that actually it will be still because it's prasadam. It's been offered to Krishna. Like your opinion on that, please.
Well, yes, that echoes my own view on this topic. There's at least two places in the Bhagavatam where it's called Dharma Dugam. Dharma Dugam. One, Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 17th chapter, text 3, is one particular where I first came across it. There's another place also, I think, I can't remember which chapter it's in, which means liquid Dharma. In other words, you can't take the Dharma out of milk, because from milk you get yogurt, you get butter, you get ghee, and ghee you can offer to the deities, you can offer to the fire. There's a verse, again I can't remember which chapter it is, maybe 7th, 8th chapter, it talks about that everything about the cow, it mentions clearly five things, urine, dung, yogurt, butter, and it mentions five things, that all of them are uncontaminated. So whatever goes on around the world of cows, you cannot take out the Dharma of cows. This is my conviction. And I think if it was that you were contaminated by using dairy from the conventional sources, I think Srila Prabhupada would have told us that. And I think that Lord Caitanya would have told us that also. There's only one place one major area in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where cow protection is discussed, and that's this conversation with Chankasi. And Lord Caitanya never says, those who drink the milk of a cow that's going to be killed are also implicated. Now, why didn't he say that? Because it's not, you're not implicated. There is an ocean of milk. Where does that come from? So, from my understanding, milk is a fabric of the universe itself. And cows are everywhere. They're everywhere. In the heavenly planets, there's cows. On the earth planet, there are cows. In the time of the Bhagavatam, one cow was injured and he was going to be killed. Nowadays, you hardly find one cow that's not going to be killed. So I see the distinction, as you're saying. I like what you said, that every Christian likes every cow. He doesn't say, I don't like these cows that are in my temples. He says, Govinda go dwijasura arta hara avatar. And we're going to hear it again in verse 7 of this chapter. Kridanam vidate dwija go suranam. He's manifesting his pastimes to give the welfare, Shemaya, of the brahmanas, the cows, and the demigods. And as you're saying, every cow. He is dear to every cow. Cows are incredible. They are so peaceful. They're so peaceful in themselves. We went to one Goshala, which I won't mention, and the cows are tethered all the time. It was horrible for us to see. We did articulate it, but the cows, they were healthy, peaceful cows. They're just happy being a cow. So they're ripe for exploitation, and people do exploit them. But cows are actually peaceful and happy animals. So, yes, I think, but what we're not doing is, we're doing the offering bit, but we're not doing the spreading bit, which is what Srila Prabhupada wanted us to do. He wanted ISKCON to have its own farms producing the flowers and the vegetables and the dairy. And that bit we're not doing as much as we should. And therefore we feel uncomfortable when people ask us the question. Because where in the world are you going to find an example of the Vedic culture, the culture of the Bhagavatam, which cows are everywhere, they're interlaced in everything, the examples in about that. For example, the source of the Ganges, or the source, it's called Gomukha, the mouth of a cow. Vrishabha, people depicting powerful like bulls. So we have a responsibility to spread Krishna consciousness and also spread the culture of cows in our own society. Then our message is strong. But because we're not doing it, we don't feel so confident anymore, and therefore we slip out the door of cows. We'll do something, we'll eat something else. We'll hide behind the onslaught of the vegan lobbyists who don't care about cows. They don't even care about people. They're anti-cow philosophy And we're succumbing to it because we don't have enough of our strong cow protection in our own society. And Srila Prabhupada wanted it. He wanted us to have our own farms where we get our own milk, and he wanted us to have bulls working in society again. So we have to keep reminding this is an important part of our mission. And if you read the Bhagavad Gita, cows are part of the Vedic culture. They have become part of our culture. And at least the deities should have all their dairy. Not a single ISKCON farm in the world, not a single ISKCON temple in the world gets their ghee from their own cows. It's shocking. Shocking. We must do it. We must do it because we have to do it for ourselves. There's our own philosophy to live it. If other people take note, that's to their benefit. But we have to do it, not as a preaching tool for everyone else, but we have to do it because this is why we're meant to live and manifest this culture.
Yes, can I just comment on that? That still when I was part of, I was practicing Krishna consciousness, we're trying to practice Krishna consciousness, it just wasn't available. The point is correct. We're going, as a preaching, and to be an example to others, it must be here, you know, or wherever people think. But as a lay person, as I was then, I would offer anyway, because I wanted to offer this cow's milk, even if it was suffering. That wasn't available for this organic milk or whatever they have now, or genuine organic milk. It was I took that. My sentiment also had something to do with it, that maybe when I was in those early days, it may be accepted by the Lord. You know, and as I came here, eventually, I saw the wonderful things or wonderful milk that's being produced here. I didn't want to take that away because I didn't know anything about it where I was living. You know, so, I was in the infant years of my, at that time, that it just wasn't available.
Actually, worth pointing out that even if it's organic, it's the feeding may be different, but the killing is the same.
Yes.
I'm more and more convinced that cow protection is completely dependent on the Sangatan movement. That without purifying the heart, without purifying the consciousness, without giving people connection to Krishna, no one's going to care about cows. And no other religion cares about cows. So they only have a place because of the deep philosophy behind it, because of their connection to Krishna. As you quoted, the more you love Krishna, the more that cows are relevant to your life. Otherwise, you'll do it for economics, and then you'll give it up when it suits you. Therefore, we have to spread Krishna consciousness as a way to save the cows. Another question here? Or comment?
Thank you for a very nice class, Shama Sundarpur. I heard over the years, like that, in the early days, that some milk in America was contaminated with fish oil, but Prabhupada still said to offer it. Is that true, or is just wanting to know?
I've heard something like that, but I think there's a reference like that, but I think in the particular case of that milk, it didn't have anything in it. I will say one thing. When I was at Chaitanya College, we were getting milk from a local farmer, and it smelt of fish because he was feeding his cows fish protein, which was legal at that time. So I think also because Prue's here, I think milk in India, in America, is fortified. There's various things they have to put in it. So it's possible that, I don't know very much about it, American milk, but certainly it's not available, not allowed in Europe, not certainly not allowed in England. Anything else? Okay, we'll stop there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.